Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood,
Matthew Davis,
and the Roto Gut, Vlad Sedler.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We are recording on May 24th, the evening of a Tuesday, getting close to Memorial Day weekend, and my co-host, Matthew Davis, is playing hooky, but for good reason. He is now a resident of the state of Illinois with his family, and he is going to a Chicago White Sox game tonight, so pretty good reason for him to be missing out, but because of his absence, I get a pleasure to have a phenomenal co-host today. So this man is the defending fantasy baseball champion of the world, NFBC crusher, basically had the best season you could ever have imagined in fantasy baseball history. And after meeting him in Vegas, I can indeed confirm he is not a robot. In fact, he's a fantastic, phenomenal human. Ladies and gentlemen, Phil Dussault. What's going on, Phil?
I'm good. How are you, Vlad?
I'm good. Thank you for coming on short notice. And I think Maddie owes you one or a few, perhaps.
Thanks for having me. I know we've tried this a couple of times. We tried to in the off season. I was supposed to come on, and then things didn't work out. But glad to finally be able to be here and talk some baseball with you, especially after getting to meet you in Vegas.
Yeah.
Feels like we know each other now.
Exactly. That was fun, and we had a very nice special brunch on one of those days in Vegas that actually Matty Davis arranged, and then he had himself quite the evening the night before, so he could not make it. Rob Silver slipped into his place, and so the three of us had a nice little brunch there, had a chance to get to know you. And then also, I mean, that was a pretty cool experience, right? Like after going there and obviously, you know, you came up and said some really kind words, really, you know, very touching words when you spoke to be congratulated on your season by Greg Ambrosius, and then getting just to meet everyone and, you know, hang out and kind of, you know, shoot the stuff, and also hanging out in draft rooms and things like that. I mean, like, just overall, how was the Vegas experience for you?
I loved it. I have to find a way to go back next year. It was funny. I've said this before, but I sort of, when I booked the trip, I was expecting like a 4 days away from the kids, getting to rest a little bit and do a little drafting. But I just end up going to bed way later than I thought every night, waking up early, prepping for drafts. And the drafts were sort of a side thing to the weekend. In the end, I was more interested by the dinners, by the lunches, by the brunches we all had together. Just makes the whole experience so much better, and it's what it's about. It's about going to Vegas, and it's the best part of it, even more so than just drafting. It seems like the end of the drafts, I just wanted it to end so we can go talk about the drafts and go eat and talk baseball.
Yeah, we had fun. We actually ended up in the same main event. This was one where you and I loaded up on some Blue Jays. I believe you had the fourth overall pick. You took Bo Bichette and then Teoscar Hernandez in the second round. I started with Vladimir Guerrero in the first round. So we've got some Blue Jays. We'll talk about them a little bit later, but I wanted to put you on the spot. Is there anyone that from Twitter that you're like, I don't know about this guy? And then you met them in person. And you're like, oh, this guy's awesome.
There's no one. There's a lot of people that I hadn't talked to I barely knew. But then I met Mike Mager, was really nice guy. Jason DuPont, I talked about a little bit. Just getting to meet those people in person was great.
Zach Roto, you like more or less after meeting him in person?
About the same.
fair.
He's the first guy I met. His flight was in from Toronto about 15 minutes after I landed, so I waited for him at the airport, and we got a cab together. So it's the first person I got to meet, and Zach's a great guy.
Well, by the way, what is it about the water in I guess the eastern part of Canada, right? So, you know, away from the Alberta provinces and British Columbia, I'm sure that there's some great players there, but you know, Ontario area, Quebec, why is there such a high influx of amazing fantasy baseball players? I mean, yourself, Rob Silver, one of my colleagues, Chris Maney, I know is pretty damn good. obviously Zach, I mean, you know, countless others, you know, sorry if I didn't mention my name, but there really is something, and I've noticed it over the last couple of years, that the best kind of per capita fantasy player in the world is a Canadian person.
Yeah, you're right. It's kind of cool. And it's surprising because baseball itself is more popular in BC and British Columbia than it is in Ontario. But I guess the Jays have that impact, I guess. But it's kind of cool. They're, especially in the last few years since they made the playoffs in 2014-2015, it's really become Canada's team. I guess since the Expos have moved, it was one of the first times where Jays really had a good team for a while. So it kind of became Canada's team, and I guess that there's some type of relationship to that between fantasy baseball and the Jays being good and more people following baseball.
So did you go to games as a kid? Like, what's your experience with baseball? I know that you're like in the last sort of 5-6 years have gotten more into like, you know, fantasy baseball, yeah, high stakes arena, but like what's your experience with baseball as a kid?
Yeah, as a kid, I guess the Expos moved when I was probably 11 or 12 years old. So as a kid, I played baseball, went to, I don't know, 5 to 10 Expos games, something like that. I was about, I don't know, an hour away from where they played. So went there once in a while. I mean, I played hockey most of my life, so it was my number one sport. But baseball was sort of a side thing where I went to a few games here and there. But once the Expos moved, I basically gave it up. Just focused on hockey and a little basketball when I was in Toronto with the Raptors. But then I picked baseball back up in, like I said, more seriously about 5 years ago. And I guess the fantasy game got me hooked back to baseball. It's such a great game.
By the way, you're a 2000 Montreal Expos. I remember them well because it was my senior year of college, and you know, it was one of my first years playing fantasy at the time. It was, you know, just like Yahoo leagues, but I remember getting kind of my first like late round gem that I was just really feeling was a guy, I'm sure you remember him, but Jose Vidro.
Yeah, I remember. So,
yeah, so I mean, in 99, yeah, he had only played a full season, hit 300, but other than that, really wasn't much else. He blew up in that season, 2000, and he was a pretty late round pick, but he hit 330, 24 homers, 97 RBI, a heck of a season for Jose Vidro. And those were some fun teams back then.
Yeah, it was. And I know I forgot the year. It might have been in those years, a little bit later. But there's one year where they were fighting for a wild card spot. And it's funny because they had that. I think there were a couple of games behind the Phillies, and the Phillies were in Montreal for the weekend. And it was something like 25,000-30,000 people for every game, which doesn't seem like a lot. But back then, they were getting about 5,000 for every game. But for that weekend where they had a chance to sort of catch the Phillies, make the playoffs. And people weren't used to having to buy tickets in advance. So they had to turn people away because they didn't have enough people to sell them tickets at Olympic Stadium. So I remember that those three games pretty clearly. But then I think they won a few. They went back on the road and lost, and they were out of it. But it was that one week in that one season where we thought, if they make the playoffs, maybe can somehow save the team. But it didn't work out, and now they moved, and hoping to get one back in a couple of years, hopefully.
Yeah, no, that would be fantastic. By the way, did you have posters in your room as a kid? I mean, were you allowed to? I know some parents are stricter than that about others. You have any baseball posters?
Not baseball. It was all hockey.
Nice.
All hockey and some Tiger Woods. I'm a huge Tiger Woods fan.
I didn't know that. Interesting. All right. Do you, by the way, you don't play any, I know you, we've talked a little bit about DFS. So yeah. I know that you, obviously, you know, you're super busy and it's tough to kind of get into it, but, do you enjoy playing DFS baseball? Like, what would it take for you to kind of play more? And then have you ever tried golf DFS?
Yeah, I've tried once in a while DFS, but I guess I'm not good enough and I don't know it enough to, I'd really have to put in the time if I had like, I don't know, 100 hours free where I can just dig in some stats, build some type of system that I could play every night, I would. But now I just use for baseball, I just look at my season long system, try to adjust it, build 5 to 10 minute lineups when I feel like playing in some night, one night. But I'm not particularly good at it. I just once in a while, just for fun, to have something something extra to watch and kind of get away from my regular players that I watch every night, just to have something different. But I don't have the time to put in to really build something where I could profit off of it.
Yeah, I'm pretty nuts because there are some days where I am rooting for this random, it's like, you know, rooting against my Dodgers because I need like the stack that's going up against them to do something, or like, you know, I don't care about the guys that I have like most exposure to in my main event, but I need like Cole Calhoun to hit a random home run, you know what I mean? Just for me to win some money and then give it back. It's pretty wild. But if you were, for example, I mean, I personally think that if you did dedicate your time to it, I mean, you obviously would be pretty good. My question to you is, say, you know, you sold your business and you just did baseball full time. You did your fantasy, your NFBC teams, and then you just played DFS. You did some betting or whatever. Do you think that there would be like a burnout from doing all baseball, or do you kind of like that balance of having like a non-baseball primary career?
I like having both. I've tried before, especially for football, DFS. I've tried putting in the work, and I guess I don't enjoy it that much. Mm-hmm. The way it is right now, I love the 3 hours I do fab on Sunday night. I love those 3 hours, but if I had to do 6 hours, I wouldn't enjoy it anymore. So the way it is right now, just the fab is setting lineups.
We'll talk about mine.
But yeah, I think I'd get bored. I don't know. It's something I like doing. Just like writing articles. I like doing the one I did for the FTN guide, but if I had to do one every week, I wouldn't enjoy it anymore. So I love having my business as full time and then just doing NFBC on the side, just enough that it's, mm-hmm. I still enjoy it.
Yeah, that's true. And I know I've talked to a lot of people about this before, and I'm curious how it is with you. I always have a little bit of a lull, just kind of not sick of baseball, but just like, you know, the constant grind, especially if I'm constantly playing DFS and writing articles, managing all my teams, answering questions. Yes, even keeper questions sometimes, and writing DFS content. There just comes a certain point, usually right before the All-Star break, where I do just feel a little burnt out. And for some reason, and it's only a few days, right? That's the 4 days off. But it's a really nice reset for me. It's a really nice refresh. I have a chance to kind of pour over stats, look into my teams a little deeper, even just like not think about baseball or DFS for a couple of days. And it feels good. So I'm kind of like recharged. I mean, have you had that? Have you experienced that in previous seasons or even last year? I know last year was obviously very specific because it was probably stressful all season. Yeah. But even then, was there any time you're like, man, I'm just kind of not focused, I'm not feeling it, or were you just gung-ho the whole time?
I've never really had that with baseball. I guess because I don't do enough to have that moment where I feel just overwhelmed. I'm mm-hmm. sick of it. I mean, there's weeks like this past week was just horrible with injuries. So there's one night I just had to turn everything off and just mm-hmm. try and move on. So I'll have those nights, but never really a big reset. Last year was kind of weird. I guess usually in July, I'll have that period where I don't look at scores anymore, in June, July, where I just, like, I know the standings are getting somewhat set. I know there's a long way to go. So I'll enjoy second lineups doing fab, and then, but watching games, I won't do it as much. Last year though, I took over the main event lead last week of June. So where the time where I'd usually not watch as much became the time where I watched as much as possible. And it just mm-hmm. never ended until the end of the season. So it was kind of stressful, overwhelming, a lot more time consuming than it had been in the past. So I didn't mind, but my family was mm-hmm. was kind of looking forward wanted it to end at some point. But but I do know, like, in what was it, about 15 years ago now, I had my own fantasy football website, and I did that mm-hmm. for 2 or 3 summers, and I liked it. It was better than any other summer job I could do, but I had those periods where I was sick of it. Like I was sick of my projections, and I would start writing articles. By week 3 or 4, I didn't enjoy it anymore. So that's kind of what I know. I know I like baseball more than football, mm-hmm. but I know if I got into that with baseball, I'd fall in the same pattern, and it's just not for me.
What was the name of your site?
Ultimate FF Strategy.
Nice.
It actually got pretty big. I had like a couple hundred thousand visitors a month at some point.
Wow.
I was doing a chat on USA Today every Wednesday morning, I believe, for an hour, answering starts questions, waiver questions, things like that. So,
I didn't know that.
And I sold an Excel spreadsheet. I was probably making 5 to 10,000 the last summer. So it was kind of nice for college students, just getting that money, and better than getting a minimum wage job at wherever random in office where I'd get bored. I got to write about fantasy football, and it's actually when I learned so much doing that, just how to build websites, and it's what led to my business afterwards. So it was definitely worth it. It was fun, but I found the right balance now.
Yeah. Yeah. And found your niche, obviously, in high stakes fantasy baseball. So, by the way, you were saying something about you during the season, you check standings. You actually check your standings during the season.
I do way too much.
Sorry. Yeah. That's a shout out to Gecko, NFBC Hall of Famer, who I just recently found out. We already know he doesn't watch games or doesn't check box scores, but now apparently doesn't check standings, which is absolutely wild. He's one of the best players out there. So yeah, and, you know, that's the crazy thing about this industry, is everybody has their own way of doing things. And and for me myself, and I know you had mentioned that you'd listen to last week's podcast where I did a little bit of therapy and fab. And one of the things I always like to do is try to kind of look inward and work on my own weaknesses. You know, I'd mentioned, I think, on previous podcasts, a lot of times I have an affinity for a certain type of, you know, the pitcher with poor control, high strikeout rate, you know, the fireballer. And so hence I would always have a problem with whip, and I've sort of corrected that over the years. That's not necessarily balancing out with Marcus Stroman's and Kyle Hendricks's of the world, but, you know, kind of found a better approach to that. Other things like stolen bases, worried about not getting enough during the draft and having to chase it during the season. Of course, maybe that's a category that's easier to find maybe than some others. And I know you wrote about saves, how that was essentially the one thing that you were worried about during the course of the season. I think you drafted right Trevor Rosenthal on that main event. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and obviously that's something you spent extra attention on in the off season and this season to prepare for it. But so far into the season, and you know, I know I'm kind of see where you are in the standings and kind of a little bit of everywhere. And I think all, you know, the four main event teams you have are all competitive. They're all within striking distance. We wouldn't be surprised to kind of see you start to creep up. But are there any specific categories that you are find yourself weak in, that you're like surprised by? Or is it just kind of like some of the players, like, you know, for example, Yamankata got hurt, or some other guys with some bad luck injuries? But like, what's sort of your synopsis of weaknesses with categories, with anything in general over the first couple months of the season?
So far it's been pretty good. I guess overall my teams are a little bit behind in power. But I think a lot of it is league specific, where I lost one league out in Army. I lost Teoscar for 3-4 weeks, and then lost Moncada for most of the season so far. So two of the guys I was kind of relying on for power. Cause I do think Moncada is due for some power this year. So two guys I was expecting to hit home runs got hurt. So I'm a little behind in that overall. And also I have a lot of guys that I think are 15 to 20 home run guys, which in the current environment, haven't been hitting as many home runs that I thought they would, someone like Jorge Polanco. But I think once we get in June, July, August with the warmer weather, those guys are going to thrive. So, I haven't paid that much attention to categories. I mean, I look every night, probably every 30 minutes, to see where my teams are in the standings. But in terms of categories, I try not to look too much. I'm more worried about just getting talent. Even when I do fab, I'll take a quick peek. But I'm mainly just worried about getting as much talent as possible on my teams. And then in a month, late June, early July, I'll start worrying about categories. The only thing I worry about is making sure I have at least one color zone on every team. just to make sure I don't fall behind in saves too much. Mm-hmm. So I think as long as you're middle of the pack, or I guess if you have 4 or 5 points in saves, you can make it up in the last 3 months. You just don't want to have like 5 saves in by the end of June, and at that point you have no shot at the overall.
By the way, sheesh, I'm looking at, maybe I'm looking at this wrong, but your robot main event 3, you drafted, I believe, basically right before the season started. You got Luis Robert on the Robert on the bench. Is that just because they had the shorter schedule?
Because he went on COVID list today.
You're able to switch him out on the Tuesday. All right.
And actually, that actually kind of worked out, because I put in Kike Hernandez, who has his first home run in a long time. So
Yes. I've been touting. He was one of my featured guys in the Fab article this week. Just to, you know, it's coming. I mean, they're continuing to give him the opportunity to lead off for that team, and you know it's coming. Super streaky guy. So there it is. That might be the beginning of a nice little streak.
And I think he started the year like 0-20. So even if you just take out that 0-20, or it might not be exactly 0-20, but you know what I mean. Like his stats aren't as bad. So like it was a cold stretch, but now it looks like he's starting to heat up a little bit. So it's coming.
Yes, it is indeed. And then I'm looking at this the same team. Notice you're playing Andrew Velasquez at middle infield. And I was actually have a really good main event team, not in the league that we are in, but another one where it's got a really solid base. It really just sort of needs some stolen bases. I was basically shopping for a Velasquez, Kevin Kiermaier, Eli White type. I somehow ended up with, I put it this way, but I ended up with Willy Castro, who may not be as much of a speed demon specifically as the other guys, but they had 15 games over the next 2 weeks. I got him for $9 unopposed, but I did have Velasquez on that bid. Is this, I know you say you don't look in at categories, but is this, was a speed play, or you like the schedule or anything specific about him there?
Yeah, a little speed play, but mainly, because I'd rather, it was basically just the overall talent, partly speedily, but speed play. Cause I always figure if I take a lead in stolen bases, I can adjust. You can always, like, your last 3 or 4 hitters on your team, you know, aren't going to be there in a month. Like, you change those every few weeks. And so, if I have too much speed, then I'll change it up. But I just like playing every day, and I think there's more power in the bat than what we've seen. Like, for a speed guy, I think he can probably hit 10 to 15 home runs. Batting average is kind of low, but I figure with his speed, his BABIP should kind of creep up a little bit. So getting a guy who can steal, I don't know, 30 bases with 15 home runs, even if he's a little bit of a drain in batting average, and his defense is great. So he's going to stay in that 8th or 9th spot in the lineup, play every day until Fletcher's up. Fletcher's out for a couple of months. While. It's basically play out with getting the full playing time, power and speed, and hoping he gets on a hot streak at some point.
And he's on one of those teams also where he's a very usable number 9 hitter. It's similar to Gavin Lux, though Gavin Lux hasn't really produced all that much. He does have a lot of runs scored for a guy hitting 9th. I think he only has 1 home run on the season, but Velasquez is similar in that regard. He's literally in the lineup every day because he is good defensively. I do agree. He does have a little bit more pop. I know he's sort of a slap hitter, but he's, probably it might hit a few home runs, and really the speed is key. I do think it's kind of difficult to sort of find guys. I mean, earlier in the week for me, I was really looking heavily at Eli White. He had that 1-3 stolen base game. And then looking ahead to the schedule, I think it was just because he had like a Golden Sombrero, struck out like 4 times on Sunday. And then I was looking, he's got 3 lefties, 3 righties. Like, I was kind of looking the individual matchups. I'm like, I don't know if he's going to kind of rack up those stolen bases. But yeah, you're right. I mean, even sometimes you get that feel for your team early on. You're like, okay, I need certain types of things, or I just know I'm not going to get it later. You know what I mean? I'm at a point where I'm even looking at minor leaguers and seeing like who might come up at some point and steal a bunch of bases. By the way, Sam Haggerty on Seattle, we've talked about him before, but he kind of pops in onto the team every year from AAA. He's kind of shuttled back and forth. He was among the minor league, the AAA stolen base leaders before getting called up. He may not play a lot, but Basically, my comment in the article was you could just totally see him like, you know, hitting three home runs, stealing four bases. As soon as people overspend and pick him up, then all of a sudden he does jack squat, and then you end up dropping him. But that's kind of the flow of fantasy baseball anyways, right? Isn't it so much like it, was there any point in your, in kind of what you do? And I know a lot of things you do are more automated, but where you are, you kind of realize like, I can't be like the common player where I'm like looking at what just happened and letting that affect me, but more looking forward to like what I'm anticipating going to happen, right? Because isn't that really the kind of the key of fantasy sports?
Yeah, I think it's sort of the advantage of having set numbers where I don't pay that much attention to hot streaks. And if anything, on Sunday afternoon, I'm hoping the guys I want to pick up don't do well, because then their prices go up. The only time where I really pay attention to the skills are someone like Lane Thomas that I picked up. For him, if he hits well the next week, he's going to earn full playing time. I guess he got a bit more of a leash now with Victor Robles hurt. But there's guys like that, like fringe players. If they hit well, you know they can actually earn full-time playing time for the next month or 2 months, where if they go 0 for 15, they're back on the bench and playing once every 2 days. So that's the one time where I'll really pay attention to the skills and how players are doing. But I'd really try to stick with my numbers. And one thing, going back to Alaska, is one thing that don't people realize is, and I see what my number is like, Velasquez has played the last 16 games at shortstop. There's a big difference between playing 16 straight and playing 13 of 16. Like if in my sheet, I project plate appearances for like the week and for the rest of the season. Change plate appearances from 525 to 600 for a full season, there's a big difference in value. And I think that's where there's an edge to be had where I try to get with my numbers, where I try to project playing time as accurately as possible. Because I think that makes a difference. Because we know, like, all those guys can look at skills, and in the end, they're all pretty similar within, I don't know, 5 or 10%. But that extra 15 to 20% of playing time makes up difference in skills. So,
well, that's actually good in relation to the, I mean, we can just kind of talk about the FAB free agent, but bidding process, but in general, I mean, does that mean that you are less likely, to kind of go after those, the teams that platoon a lot, like San Francisco Giants? Is there some sort of like manual adjustment you make? And then what do you do, for example, in a case where it's 2 half weeks of 3 games, but then it's like, you know, two righties and a lefty, two lefties and a righty? Doesn't that kind of like screw things up for you when you're looking at like the Darren Ruffs and Austin Slaters of the world?
Yeah, I don't think I have a single Giant on any of my teams. The Rays are the team that's frustrating me. But I try. Like I have Yandy Diaz on a bunch of teams, and early he looked like some of platoon, then rest, and it's just trying to figure out what the Rays are doing. But yeah, most of the platoon bats, I'll pick them up for a week if I see the Giants are facing four righties, then someone like Jock Peterson or Luis Gonzalez becomes more interesting. I'll try to pick them up for half a week or a full week. Pick them up for the full week, but use them for either half a week or the full week. But other than that, I think most of those guys, unless they're really, really talented, most guys are streamers. And I think it's hard being a guy that you want to hang on to full season if they only face righties. It's hard to get enough playing time to make up for, it's hard to have enough skills to make up for the lack of playing time.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, Jock Peterson was a good example. He got off to a really hard start to the season. And I remember, because in our main event, I picked him up, had a nice little week out of him, and then our first half week, and then I got a little too cute. He was like, okay, two righties and a lefty on the weekend. I think he hit like three bombs that weekend, but I sat him for the weekend. I was like kind of overanalyzing, and that happens a lot. And you make a good point about the plate appearances, because then I notice that I'm never really like, you know, it's the Jeff Zimmerman style. The guy is great at it. One of the reasons why he's always so competitive is he's, you know, he's really focusing on plate appearances. He's racking these guys up. And I do realize myself being sort of lax sometimes. If there's a player I like personally or because I might like their schedule, I'll almost sort of gloss over the fact that these guys aren't playing every day. It's like I'm trying to get three games worth of production out of two games on a weekend. You know what I mean? And you can get in trouble a lot of that a lot of times, especially during these months when you have rainouts or when there's a shift in the pitching schedule. And now you got two lefties and a righty instead of three righties and things like that, right?
Yeah. The one thing where, I drafted Jock Peterson in a bunch of leagues and I dropped him, I believe, the first weekend. And I really regretted it for about 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm fine with it because he's cooled off. The reason I dropped him actually is because I think in his first game, they pinch hit for him when a lefty came in probably the sixth or seventh inning, and he had two plate appearances. I'm like, and then he sat against a lefty. So as soon as I saw, I drafted him because I thought he could be a full-time player. And if he hit well enough, they'd let him play. But then as soon as I saw Gabe Kapler doing his thing and pinch hitting for him, as soon as lefty came in, I dropped him. I guess there's different ways to do things. I know like we had some players in common, but we do things really differently. Sometimes we end up on the same guys, and it's just my way of doing things and focusing on playing time, because I think it's one of my strengths, whereas trying to ride the hot streaks and getting a feeling for players is more your thing, and you'll be right about things like that where I wouldn't be. I just time it wrong all the time, and it would just frustrate me so much.
Absolutely. You kind of have to stick to a process, because that's the thing is if you're consistently kind of switching up a process or your feel on things because something isn't working out, you're just going to end up continually going down this downward spiral. It kind of happens all the time. Same thing, like, if I'm playing DFS, and it's weird. There's never really any middle ground. I was telling you that a couple of weeks ago, that it's like when I'm on, I cannot be stopped. I'm at the top of all contests. I'm coming close to winning big GPPs. And when I'm off, I'm off. And so the smart thing in those cases is to back off a little bit, maybe even play a little less, or, maybe take a couple of days off and refresh. So yeah, you're right. I mean, there really is so much to that, and kind of working on sort of sticking to your process, or but learning and picking things up from other people. Like there's no there's no really pride lost by learning from your competitors and from smart people. And maybe that's one thing that we can talk about is during draft champion season, which I think for most people know, and most people draft them from like November through February, even into March, we're drafting these 15 team 50 round drafts. And really, this is our way of prepping, getting to know the player pool, getting a feel for ADP and all these things. But there's a lot of talk as far as, these are Phil's guys, and so, or Casey Cha's guys, or Lindy's guys, whatever. And like, people start drafting them without really questioning why. I'm not ashamed to say that I will always see, who players are drafting, and then try to formulate my opinion, or try to see what are they seeing that I'm not seeing. And I know you and I had a discussion a couple of months ago when I saw you starting to draft Baltimore Orioles pitchers. I know there was the adjustment in the ballpark, and then I just kept seeing Jordan Lyles pop up on your team, and I was like, hey dude, he's awful. Like, I know you probably know something I don't, but like, him and I think like Ronaldo Lopez and I forgot who else are like, the worst pitchers in baseball over the last few years. I think Waka, someone else, but there was something to it. And then at a certain point, it just kind of clicked for me that in this format, in rounds 40, 45, where he was going, it made sense, even if there wasn't that park adjustment or whatever, to draft pitchers like that, because in general, nobody was on the Orioles pitchers. And, there is some talent in that rotation, whatever, but like, is there anything you can kind of, let us know, or just kind of into your mind, is what you saw specifically, like besides the the park adjustment, like how much of the factor of like it's still the AL East, a lot of really good teams there, these pitchers could get trounced a lot, granted you wouldn't have to use them a lot quite frequently because they are sort of back of your rotation type guys, but just like any insight as far as like what you saw with those Baltimore pitchers.
Most of the other Baltimore pitchers I had, I mean, it's just because they were bodies that would pitch and hoping that use them once or twice in the year, or maybe one of them clicks and it works out. Lyles was a bit different. Because I noticed at the end of last year, I think in his last 8 starts, he had about a 4x FIP and a 4 ERA. And he started using his slider a lot more in those games. So that's one of the things that my formulas picked up on and that I really liked about him. But then he signed in Baltimore, which was probably the worst landing spot for him. The worst division, the worst team in that division. And yeah, the park adjustment, but that left field is so big that, fewer home runs, but I think there's more hits in that, because in there. So it hurts the whip, helps the ERA. So in the end, I don't think it'll be that big of a difference for pitchers. If he'd signed with a team like St. Louis, for example, I would have drafted him in main events, probably around 25, just because I love the skills. Now I have him in all my DCs because he was going so late in Baltimore. This week, I think he had the Yankees and the Red Sox in his 2-start week. I'm not using him anywhere. I'll be using him when he's not playing against the AL East teams or when he has decent 2-start weeks. But I just wish it could have been better, because he would have been a big target if he signed elsewhere.
And he's, I think I saw something last night about him and Cole pitching, what was it, like a combined 240 or something. It was like the first time.
Yeah, I think they both went over 110 pitches, which is like the first time since at least 10 years, I think. It had been a while.
yeah, that's true. And then we did get a little bit of that Bruce Zimmerman action, I remember, second week of the season or something like that. So I think he did all right in his first one. I'm like, you know, I'm going to roll him out here for the two-step on a DC. Got lucky. It was like great. And then, you know, it's just one of those things, you know, it's like a ticking time bomb. You kind of watch out. You pick your spots, right? Like if you're facing the Yankees 3 times in a row and then a singles coming up at Yankee Stadium, you probably don't want to use that. But, you know, we're getting better over time as far as streaming goes, right? I mean, there are some pitchers that are just immune to it, right? I mean, I think there's some pitchers that who is it? Like Jordan Lyles actually is a perfect example. My experience with him over the years with DFS is when you stack against him with a good team, with a good offense, he will throw a gem against them. Then he'll go face like the Rangers or something, and then he just gets bombarded for like 8 or 9 runs. It's crazy how it works. But
yeah, I guess those pitchers where the way they pitch, or the way their pitches move, that they favor certain types of hitters. But that's what you're good at, and that's way better. You're better at DFS than I am. You know those things where I just focus on the overall skills and of each team and hope it works out. But it doesn't work out that often in DFS.
What about talking about Fab? I know that you even kind of announced it, or after, I think maybe it was after the fact, but the Drew Rasmussen was. Yeah. Somebody you loved, and somebody dropped him in one of your main events. And I remember that you were like, I'm going to get him, like whatever it takes, I'm just going to spend. How much did you end up spending? How much Fab do you, if you recall, how much you have left on that team? And have you spent that much before in Fab? What's your typical, like, you know, process with that?
I think I ended up spending, it was low 300s, 340 actually.
Okay.
340 with a backup of 142. But he was available in one other main, and he went about 250. When I did the bids, the number I came up with was about between 250 and 270, which should be enough to get him. And that's what worked out in the other main where he was available. I just went higher, low 300s, because I really wanted him. I didn't want to miss out. He was a target in draft season, and he actually performed better so far this season. When he was dropped, he was performing better than expectations, according to me. His ERA was a little bit higher, but his Sierra XFIP, all the metrics were better than I expected. So I figured I liked him even more than I liked in draft season. So I wanted to get him, and not often can you get a top, for me, he was a top 40 pitcher, even top 30 at the time. So you don't get those guys in Fab often, so I didn't want to miss out. Now I'm down to about 550 in Fab on that team, so
not bad.
It's not too bad. I'm just trying to, like, the difference is this week I was bidding on Lane Thomas everywhere, about $20. On that team I bid 12, so just lowering my bids a little bit, trying to get it back, but it's with 500. I think you're a little lower on your teams than that. So for me, it's low, but I know it's possible to make it work.
By the way, this is a real thing. These are my guys and I have to get them. And there's a tax that we pay for that. I think that's really a thing. I mean, for me, for example, Drew Rasmussen was very key to my ascension up the ERA and WHIP chart there towards the end of the season. I had him and Ranger Suarez, who were two of my best pickups all season, just gem after gem every week. Granted, Rasmussen wasn't going five innings a lot. He wasn't really racking up the wins or the strikeouts, but he was just never giving up runs. And my ERA and WHIP just kept improving. Ranger Suarez was obviously a different animal. He was getting the strikeouts. And I mean, his matchups were insane. He was getting like, Triple A Pittsburgh, Arizona teams, just like the most beautiful matchup. So it was perfect. We'll get some of that later in the season, but they're just like certain times where like, you feel like, hey, this is my guy. I got to get him. Speaking of which, Brady Singer, I've had a hate love thing with him in the past, but at a certain point, at least before the season, I was like, I like this guy. I feel like last year towards the end of the season, I was very kind of tuned in on him and realized that he was pitching hurt for a little bit and that had to affect his numbers. I forgot it was like August or sometime like that, but he had a couple of bad starts, but it turns out he was pitching hurt. He ended up going on the IL, missing essentially the rest of the season. And I'm looking at him this year. I'm like, he is a good, solid prospect. That's a good pitcher's park, a solid division. He's somebody I like. And then I remember you telling me that 2 weeks ago when you went after him, you ended up paying a little bit of a tax because, you know, I like Brady Singer. I'm in your league. And I think I ended up being in like $8. I probably should have given him more attention, quite obviously, but you ended up getting him, right? But how is that, like, knowing that, you know, there are people in your league that might be affecting what you're bidding and you're having to pay a tax on it?
I just remember I guess that comes from the live drafting experience, because I remember between the two of us, I believe it was Matthew Anderson. And I know you took Singer. Then he looked at you, and I'd seen in his previous draft he took Singer around that round. So when you took him, I saw him talk to you and say I wanted to take Singer, and then I wanted to take Singer right after that. So you basically double sniped us on Brady Singer. So
and then dropped him.
Yeah. So I knew there was a lot of interest in him because of that live draft experience. So when he came up in Fab. That's league where I bid on him, I think in all my leagues or most of them. But in our league, I put an extra $5 to $10, I think, just to make sure I got him. Ended up being an unopposed bid, but at least I got my guy.
Doesn't matter. No. If you get a guy, if he's healthy, and granted, he's not going to be throwing scoreless 7-inning games with 9 strikeouts every time, and probably will get hit up a little bit here and there, but if he's healthy, you just kind of look back at that and just smile, right? Like, I got him for 25, and you know, just somebody that's going to be helping me for most of the season, just really kind of strengthening up that pitching depth.
Yeah. And I mean, even like his first 2 years, he was a 4x FIP kind of guy. In a weak division. So even if you just get that, it's great. But then his new changeup that he worked on in AAA and that he started using in his first three starts, it's looked great. So, and former first round pick, his third year, that's usually when they start to break out. They figure they work on their pitches. They know what works against major league hitters and what doesn't. If I just get the 4 ERA guy in that division, he's going to be a useful guy. But there's always that upside thing where if the changeup clicks, if the first round pedigree shows up, he can be a top 30 pitcher, top 40 rest of the way. So I like those kind of guys where you get the safety and the upside.
So real talk for 1 second. Did you even have a this year's Robbie Ray? And if not, were there just a kind of a glove of candidates like your later round rounds 20 to 30? Guys that kind of fit that, or was there one guy that really stood out to you?
So Rob Silver asked me that question. The name I gave him was Patrick Corbin. Just because actually what I said is if I have to pick one, it'll be Patrick Corbin, just because of the guy who was successful 3 or 4 years ago, who no one paid attention to the last few years, and I thought he could bounce back. Obviously that one's not working out. But in the Robbie Ray range, the guys I was looking at, Nick Pivetta, Andrew Heaney, Jamison Taillon, they're my three favorite guys around pick 250 that I got in most leagues. And so far, skills-wise, they're looking good. I'm just hoping Heaney comes back and it's the same guy we saw in those first two starts. Because drafting starting pitchers in that range that put up top 30 pitcher numbers are it's what wins leagues and what wins overall titles, I think.
Yes, and it's really it's very gratifying to land on those guys, right? There is something special about landing on a pitcher that and that you got for nothing or nobody was really on, or that just that you were ahead of the curve on, and they just are just you don't have to worry about them. You just leave them in the lineup for essentially every week and just, you know, just get paid for it. It's fantastic. There's just something really right. I mean, isn't there something more special about getting a pitcher,
for sure,
right?
But and I'm sure you've had that team before where you have five or six starting pitchers that you just put in every week. You don't worry about streaming. You don't worry about looking at two-star pitcher. You don't worry about any of that. You just put in the same five, six guys every week, and you might stream one guy. But that all the teams where I have success with are those teams where I just put in those same five, six guys every week. Don't worry about matchups unless like someone's in cores or something like that. But those are the team that I've had success with. And to have those five, six guys, you need to hit on a couple of them in those rounds, 15 to 20 range. And I think that makes a big difference.
Absolutely. Real quick on players that when you give up on somebody that is a top five, six round guy in your main events, we're talking like probably like 75, 90 overall. I know in the chat, in the Discord over at FTN, you're mentioning something about you were getting pretty close to dropping Tyler O'Neill, right? Was that the case?
Yeah.
Like, why, I guess?
For hitters, it's all about playing time. And in that last week and a half before the injury, or I guess maybe he was hurt already and we didn't know about it, he was playing like one every two games. So, I mean, you can't have a hitter like that as good as he is. What I was thinking is if he kept that up for another week or two, just playing two, three games a week and striking out two times, like twice every game, I was probably going to give up at some point. Now the injury might have explained why he wasn't playing as much and why he wasn't performing. So now I'm hanging out to him, hoping he comes back in a week or two when he gets a chance to play every day. But yeah, for hitters, it's playing time. For hitters, for pitchers, I'd say we're about Jose Berríos is one guy, who I was not thinking about dropping yet, but not using at all. And probably 2-3 weeks away from dropping. Now he had a pretty good game. I think it was yesterday, more strikeouts than he'd had before and sort of skill stabilizing. So hoping he turns it around and becomes a hole. But if he had like three more weeks like he'd been doing so far this year, he probably would have been a drop, or at least someone I'd consider dropping in 2-3 weeks, depending on who's available, obviously. But that's about it. Playing time for hitters and skills, about 2 months for pitchers, I guess.
So based on that, are you telling me that Franmil Reyes is hiding an injury and Marcus Semien? I mean, isn't that crazy? Like some of these guys for so long into the season just stink. Like at some point, right? Like I don't think you're dropping Marcus. I don't think you drafted him. I didn't either.
No.
But I mean, what do you think you would be doing with him, and what kind of numbers do you see at him in the end of the year? I know you're probably not like digging into him and looking at things, but like if you're seeing he's near the bottom in Statcast, exit velocity, hard hit, all that stuff, you just assume either. Where does your mind go? Is it a assumption of he's hiding an injury, something's wrong with him, or he's just cold and he'll figure it out? Like at what point do you really, you know, what's your thought process with a guy like that?
I'd get frustrated, but I think I'd remember Jay Aram 3 years ago where he had the worst 2 months of his career, maybe even 3 months. And then randomly around the All-Star break, he turned it around and had an awesome second half. So it happens where hitters just go in a huge cold stretch. Semien right now is hitter 76 in my ranking. So he's dropped a lot, but So I'll play matchups. He basically becomes a guy where he needs 3 or 4 games every week. We know the Rangers are going to keep playing him, so I'm not even thinking about dropping him just because he's playing every day. So at one point, you figure he's going to turn it around, but he's more in the range of if he's got bad matchups in April, you wouldn't have sat him. You'd start him all the time. Now in May, you're thinking, well, if he's got bad matchups, then you sit him, but you're not dropping him. I think he's going to figure out at some point. I think he's still got, I don't know, he can hit 15 home runs, 15 to 20 home runs rest of the way, still 7 to 10 bases probably. So it's just a question of time again. Once he gets going, then you go back to using him every week.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be at all shocked. I actually would be shocked if he hit under 20 home runs. I know he's at none, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I don't really play him. I actually played him tonight in defense. I know that game hasn't started. They're facing Noah Syndergaard, but I'm in the lineup because I think that he hits his first home run of the season. So we'll see if that comes to fruition.
That's a bold take.
Yeah, it's very bold. It's got to come eventually, right? I'm not going to play him every day till it happens, but tonight, just throwing it out there. Maybe it'll be off of like Jaime Barria or something if he comes in the game. Syndergaard's out early, if he's even up with the team. The Blue Jays. What are your thoughts? You're obviously very familiar with them. You're invested. You want to see these guys kind of figure it out. But isn't struggling and heating up, isn't it? It's sort of addictive, right? Like within a team in a lineup, right? Because all these offenses, they go through their ebbs and flows. Like no matter how awful the Detroit Tigers are right now, there will come a time when Javier Baez and Jonathan Scope and Candelario, they're all just kind of hitting well, and they'll go through their stretch of a couple of weeks. Who knows if that's this week, next week, or in a couple of months, but they'll kind of go through that cycle. We expect the Blue Jays offense to kind of go on a longer cycle of a hot streak, right? Like we assume it'll get going soon, but there's something contagious. Like nobody's really hitting on that team. We know Guerrero, you know, kind of stunk. He stunk since kind of, what was it? A hand injury or something.
Yeah.
So at what point do you start worrying about these guys? Do you at all? Or you're like, okay, at some point they're just going to all just start clicking middle of June, end of June, and just do the thing they always do.
Yeah. I think the Red Sox are a great example of that. They need Vlad, or probably Vlad, just to have a game like Story had, or it can be like a come from behind win where they're down 8-4. They score 6 runs with a couple of home runs, a grand slam in there. And at one point, it's just going to turn around. Like that Story going nuts that weekend has basically turned their whole offense around. Now Kike's hitting today, who'd been in the cold streak for a long time. So, I think for whatever reason, it seems to be contagious where they just need a big game from a leader. They put up 8 to 10 runs in that one game, maybe a comeback, maybe something against the Yankees or the Red Sox where there's momentum swing somewhere in there. But I think I just need that one game where things turn around. As weird as it sounds, it often seems to work out that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why you just keep playing those guys, and at some point they'll get going and then the team's going to turn around.
Exactly. And for the most part, I think looking at it, Bo Bichette hitting .235, but still having, you know, a couple of a few good games a week. You know, Teoscar struggling right now. We know when he's healthy, if the obliques fully healed, it may not be now, you know, he'll be fine. Vladgar, these guys will be absolutely fine. So any opportunity to get in on those, nobody's dropping these type of guys, but just know that those guys will be okay at some point. Wanted to wind things down here with a quick game of a rapid fire, just the rest of the season, who you would pick if you had to basically redraft now and have these guys for the rest of the season. I'm going to start with some hitters, and you don't have to go into too much detail, but just a quick thought on it. Start with a couple of pairs of catchers. The struggling Alejandro Kirk versus the similarly struggling Keibert Ruiz.
I'd go Keibert. I think Kirk has been playing, but I think the Jays prefer Jansen behind the plate. And I think at some point they might make a trade like they did last day. They brought in Dickerson, and Kirk will get fewer chances at DH.
I'm with you there. I do like both. I do slightly like Ruiz, and he was a little bit of a higher ADP during the season. Rookie first round overall pick Adley Rutschman of the Baltimore Orioles, or Cincinnati's rather solid Tyler Stevenson.
Tyler Stevenson. I don't think there's another catcher other than Sal Perez and maybe Contreras when they're healthy, who's playing for, I think he's played 14 of the last 15, and the one game he missed was because he had a bit of an injury. So if you can get a catcher playing every single day like that, there you can't make up for that.
And a really, really good contact hitter as well.
Yeah.
A couple of guys both intriguing because they're part of your exposure, your profile, Christian Yelich or Ketel Marte?
Yelich has taken over Marte in my rankings. I had Ketel Marte a lot higher, but now he's moved down in the order a little bit, had a tough start. He's turning things around, but I don't. There doesn't seem to be as much power as I was hoping there'd be this year. So Yelich seems to be not fully back, but he's getting there.
And if we're at the All-Star break and Marte gets traded to a contender, does that change things for you?
It depends. If he's hitting ninth, then I won't like it. But if he's hitting second on the Yankees or something like that, then yeah, it becomes it might change things.
Max Muncy or Marcus Semien?
Neither. Semien, okay, I guess.
Fair. Fair. Yeah, get some stolen bases there. And you don't get points for walk rate. So
yeah, I guess the one concern with Muncy is he's had a tough start, and there's the injury, which might explain some of it. So I'd go with Semien, which, as far as we know, is just struggling and could be like a J-Ram thing a few years ago. And I feel better about Semien turning things around.
Garrett Cole or Corbin Burns?
Burns. I was early in draft season in November, December. I was saying all in on Cole. Just because with the NLDH coming, I thought he was a step ahead of Cole, but then all the way those teams in their division made moves, the NL Central became so weak and the LDs became so strong. It gave the edge to Burns, and he's pitching really well right now.
I'm with you too. There just really is something, even with the DH, just about that division, that factor. So Corbin Burns by a couple of hairs, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Here's one. These are two incredibly Jekyll and Hyde guys, depending on what day of the week it is, or how they wake up, you know, on the right or the wrong side of the bed, and where their fastball or velocity is, basically. Nick Pivetta or Yusei Kikuchi?
Nick Pivetta. I love Nick. I know he had a bad start to the year. But then I believe it's in the third inning of his third game. It really feels like Robbie Ray last year. If I had to pick a comp now, it would be Nick Pivetta being this year's Robbie Ray. Ray had a tough start last year, and then in, I believe it was the same thing, second or third inning of one start, he just started throwing strikes and turned things around. And Pivetta had the same thing where he figured out something mechanical with his pitching coach in between the second and third inning, and he turned things around, and he had a complete game last week. And he seems to be on the right track, and I believe he's off to a good start tonight as well. So,
yeah, Trevor Story just in front of my eyes struck out with the bases loaded, but they're no outs, and they're up 8-0. Pretty crazy. How about a couple aces here? Teammates Zach Wheeler or Aaron Nola?
It's really close. Might lean Wheeler. Just because we said last year Nola's unlucky, his Sierra and XFIP are more representative of who he is, but it wasn't last year and hasn't been so far this year. Part of it's probably the horrible defense they have, but I guess it affects Wheeler as well, but for some reason I probably slightly into Wheeler.
Yeah, for some reason he just feels slightly safer to me, and I know kind of Nola, the longer he lasts in games, the more you're just sort of sweating it. You're like, Wheeler just kind of feels like he's got more longevity. He's been fantastic. I mean, just his control rate in the last couple of years, his walk rate and just overall control, his body of work. When he's healthy, he's really on point. Do like both guys.
I think Wheeler had a couple of tough starts early on, but he had a late start to the season. So, and he's really turned things around in the last four or five games. So,
let's end this one on a doozy. And I don't know, this might be very easy for you or it might be a tough decision, but San Diego's Joe Musgrove or Tampa's Shane McClanahan?
I go Shane McClanahan. He's probably my biggest miss this year. I have zero shares, but he's been so good. I think he's just, I mean, I kind of like Musgrove, but I think McClanahan is could be a top three, top four pitcher by the end of the year.
I mean, the dude doesn't miss, like, being good. He's just a freaking amazing. I can't even put into words how amazing he is. Similar miss for me, even though, so I ended up, I think, with a share, but it was one of those things where I was over affected by, instead of kind of like letting logic sit in, I let the numbers of, like, you know, the high hard hit rate and certain things about last year that, you know, or the price. I'm like, okay, if he falls a little bit, maybe I'll take him, but I'm not going to go out of my way to take him. So yeah, big swing and miss there.
He's going to be my number one case study next winter. I always look like at the top two or three breakouts that I missed, I'll dig into the numbers, mm-hmm. see what I missed, see what didn't go right. And then I'll just dig into their numbers, see, mm-hmm. and try to just find some number that I missed that could apply to other players. So he's number one on the list right now.
And that's why, my friend, that's why you are one of the best in the world, because you're digging into those things, right? You're looking into what I missed, looking into those weakness, you know, your own personal weaknesses, looking to get better. I think, you know, obviously you understand it's a big, I don't say responsibility, but just, you know, all eyes are on you this season and how you're, you know, how you're doing. Obviously a season like that is so difficult to replicate, but you're, you know, I think you are one of the best fantasy players in the world. I very much consider you a good friend and look up to you and continue to learn from you. So really appreciate you coming on the show. Any last minute thoughts or anything you want to talk about or promote?
No, just thanks for those kind words. It means a lot coming from you. You're one of the guys I looked up to, and you were just that guy on Twitter that I followed and I wouldn't dare talk to, sort of not intimidating, but I was just new to this game, didn't know much, and I was just looking up to you. So it was great to meet you in Vegas, great to do this podcast with you, and look forward to doing more of these and seeing you again, hopefully next year in Vegas.
Absolutely. That sounds good. And yeah, good luck with everything the rest of the season. Hopefully we'll have you back on at some point this season. So keep crushing it this season, Phil. So for our special guest, Phil Dussault, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your host on Twitter at @MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.